Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, chair of the club's Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum and chair of this program. And now it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Lynn Saputo, who will introduce our speaker. Lynn Saputo, MD, has pioneered the development of integrative, holistic, person-centered preventive healthcare model called Health Medicine. Is the founder of the Health Medicine Forum, a nonprofit educational foundation, and the Health Medicine Center in Walnut Creek, the author of Return to Healing, Radical Healthcare Reform, and the Future of Medicine, has developed a free website, www.drsaputo.com, has more than 2,000 audio and video files organized to provide free integrative information, more than 30 common healthcare conditions, and is deeply involved in NIH-funded research at UCSF on use of infrared light therapy for pain management. Lynn?
Thank you, Bill. Mike and I go back a long way. Probably it's been since 1994, at which time we were working together to start an organization called the Health Medicine Forum. And we did a lot to pioneer what health medicine is, and he was instrumental in developing some of the programs that we do, mainly how to do something called a healing circle, where we bring different practitioners from a wide range of disciplines together to see patients for a couple of hours at a time. So I'm much indebted to Michael for his work there, and it's been a pleasure working with him, where he also co-founded the Health Medicine Center, which is where I work. Michael's a licensed PhD in psychology. He co-founded the Transpersonal Psychology Program at JFK University. He's a fellow of the American Association of Integrative Medicine, and he pioneered the integration of Qigong into psychology and is the first person to take that to the graduate level. So he has really done something as a pioneer that's shown something within his lifespan, which is a little bit unusual. Most pioneers do about a foot of the 500-mile journey, never get noticed, but are instrumental, and without them it could never have happened. He's written a lot of papers, a lot of them on hypertension and Qigong and psychology. He's the author of about 20 publications, and he has his wonderful book out, The Path of the Reluctant Metaphysician. And it really does tell the story of our times, and I encourage you all to get a copy for a couple of reasons. One is because it's a good book, and the other is to support him because he's here taking his time for us. So you might want to go to his websites. He has two of them. One, The Reluctant Healer, which is, of course, about his book. The other, bodymindhealing.com. Michael, it's a pleasure to have you here. Have a great time.
Thanks. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and thank you so much, Lynn. Thank you very much to Lynn for the great introduction. It's been fantastic working with him for all of these years, and thank you to all of you for coming here. What I'm going to be talking about today is the unraveling of our culture and integral healthcare, and how that's related to the politics, economics, and ecological dimensions of our times, in addition to the fact of what we all normally know as integral healthcare, which has to do with body, mind, and spirit. So I'm going to try to bring all that together in a short amount of time. My favorite thing to do is to have 5 days with people when I teach down at Esalen, and then do this. It's not a talk, it's a presentation where you do all the exercises and everything for 5 days. And then sometimes I do it for a weekend, and then sometimes I do it for a day or for 3 hours. So I'm going to basically try to go into a Procrustean bed that's a spiritual Procrustean bed and not going to be crushing me too much, and squeeze what I have to say into about 50 minutes. So Len gave a certain kind of introduction about me, but the way I would like to introduce myself is when I used to sit by a river where two streams became one as a child. That's where I would hang out in New Jersey, way before any kind of spiritual thing came into our culture, meditation came, or anything. And I would wait where two streams became one, and I would just sit there and reflect. Now, Native Americans say that the places that draw you in your childhood hold keys to your destiny. And I'd like, while I'm talking, for you to think about where you like to be and hang out when you were kids. Because Native Americans will say that those places have something to do with what your life path is. And for me, that proved true because I join now mind and body, east and west, ancient and modern in my work. Each of you have a story like that. So what I'm going to be talking about is the corporatization of health, stories and practices for troubled times. I'm going to show you what an all-vector approach is, talk about energy medicine and energy psychology. I'll be talking about some case illustrations from my own practice and from our clinic where I work with Dr. Saputo, and a little bit about research and some action steps politically. I'm going to see whether I can do that in 50 minutes. So right now we're in an unraveling culture. We're going through species extinctions, economic recession and depression. Some of our kids or people that are graduating from school have student loans that are such that their backs are broken when they're graduating, or they're indentured servants for many years. There's a gross wealth disparity, environmental degradation, a healthcare crisis, and an attack on our guts in many different ways by the very foods we eat. Normally, I go through each one of these and give a lot of evidence for each one of these. But right now, since I'm talking to a sophisticated audience, I think I'm going to skip going into a lot of these details about that, because I think a lot of you know what those things are. But it's interesting to me that I just made a proposal to two different spiritual centers that are very well known to give a presentation on these troubled times that we're living in. And both of these places said to me, don't use the word troubled times. That's too much of a downer. Use something more upbeat. And so it very much fit in with the principle that I have in the book, which is there's something wrong with a spirituality that's not able to go down into the depths and go down into really addressing the troubled times that we're with. And I'm going to show you in the course of the talk why I distinguish between metaphysical and spiritual, and why I believe that the term metaphysical is, for me, and maybe for you, a better term to talk about the problems of our age, how it incorporates both. So right now we're in a time of the corporatization of healthcare. One of the issues that we have is a belief in American exceptionalism, where we believe that the best healthcare in the world is in the United States. Most of us that are aware of the current dimensions of the news know that that's not true, and that we're not the lowest in infant. We're the lowest in. We have a very high degree of infant mortality. We have the highest in healthcare costs. 60% of bankruptcies in the United States are because of our medical problems. We don't have the best healthcare in the world. And again, I could go into all of that a lot more and talk about various different sides of that. There's been a history of collusion of Western medicine with big pharmacy, and you can read more about that in John Robbins' book or in Dr. Saputo's book. In either of those places are really good places to read about that collusion and how we got into the mess that we're in. For example, the Western medical system made an agreement with the pharmacological companies way back in, I think, the 1920s or 30s, that they were going to stop funding medical schools that honored chiropractic, midwifery, herbal medicines, homeopathy, many things like that, and got them essentially kicked out of the ballpark. And it's not to say that Western medicine doesn't have a lot of really great things to offer, but when it's myopic and it's not allowing these alternative methods to be complementary, then we have troubled times. The pharmaceutical industry has captured our legislature and is funding in a place of regulatory capture, where people that are heads of the FDA go back to the pharmaceutical industry afterwards, and they go back and forth, so we get biased research, so it's hard to even trust our research. So that brings us into troubled times, when we can't even trust the information very often that we're getting from some doctors because they've been hypnotized by the pharmaceutical companies. I'll talk more about that later. We have adverse drug reactions because we can't trust some of the research, for example, on various different kinds of Vioxx. You all know about that in relationship to the heart. You know, there's been not proper research because we have the fox in the hen house doing the research, and we don't get the research very often that we need. But the biggest dimension has to do with a disease model versus a health prevention model. And if you just look at insomnia as an example, one of the first things that happens whenever people have a difficulty with sleep, that many people through TV and through many other places are trained to take various drugs like Ambien, not knowing that they're potentially addictive, very often addictive, and that they create things like sleep driving and things like that. When, on the other hand, there are studies showing that Qigong and other kinds of methods can help insomnia naturally without going to the pharmaceutical companies. So integral healthcare is mostly what I want to be talking about, and that we're in a crisis right now, and that there's a new paradigm that's coming in. Very often that paradigm has to do in integral healthcare with honoring body, mind, and spirit, and that this is what's coming in our 21st century. So there's wider dimensions of integral healthcare that don't just have to do with body, mind, and spirit. They have to do with the political, economic, and ecological dimensions of looking at the fact that that GMOs are in our foods. And right now we have Proposition 37 that's going to be helping us because California is the forefront with at least letting us know when GMOs are in our food. And there has been a disease model that's around that promotes pharmaceutical companies rather than allowing us to empower ourselves with our own healing methods. And I'm probably going to try to give you some of those. No matter how technologically effective modern medicine may be, says Larry Dossey, if it does not honor the place of meaning in illness, it may lose the allegiance of those that it serves. Now, there's two types of meaning. One is etiological meaning, which means what's the cause of this. And so very often Western medicine will look at the biochemical cause rather than, let's say, the spiritual cause or the psychological cause. And then there is a teleological meaning, the meaning of where your illness is going. Both are important to really look at what the real cause of something is as well as where something's going. So when you or our culture has an illness, what does it mean? What is the root cause of it? And what is a spiritual way to look at it? There's a story that I like to tell about the old woman in a cave. Once upon a time, there was a woman who was sitting in a cave. For years and years, she was weaving her blanket, a beautiful tapestry, beautiful garment, weaving and weaving. She was just there and with her black dog and a big cauldron of soup. And that's what she would do every day for decades and decades. One day she was back stirring her soup and she came back to her beautiful tapestry. And she looked at it, and there had been a thread that was left that she left out of the garment that she was getting ready to pick up on her next stitch. The dog came and picked up that stitch and pulled it apart. And the whole tapestry that she'd been working on for years and years had all come apart, just like one of the people in the audience is knitting, but nobody please tear her knitting apart. But what happens when our knitting is torn apart when you've worked on something really beautiful? Most of us get really upset. Some of us might kick the dog. What did she do? She came by. She took one breath breathed out. She looked at the tapestry and began knitting it all over again and creating an even better tapestry. Now, what does it take that when we're really upset, we know that psychosomatic disease exists, and when something happens in most of our lives, we might get extremely angry and hold on to it if our psychology is that way. We hold into it and seethe in it. If the dog was one of our partners in relationship, we might have a passive-aggressive dimension to it, a relationship to it, or whatever. But what she did is she just meditated and went back. So the question is, how do any of us deal with stresses, which are one of the major things in life? Because every day our lives are unraveling. So stress accounts for 75 to 90% of all primary care visits in the United States. And it's been linked to all kinds of causes of death, such as cardiovascular disease, cancer, accidents, and suicide. Now, normally, the pharmaceutical companies would say, don't worry, if you're stressed, here, there's some statins you can take. There are various kinds of anxiety, benzodiazepines. There's various things you can take to reduce that stress or the way that it's affecting your heart. So they turn a natural element of the unraveling of the garment of our lives into a commodity to sell us. There's a method that I learned from one of my mentors called focusing. This is from Dr. Eugene Genlin. And he had a way of going into the body to really find what the meaning is of not just one of our issues in life, but to really go into one of those issues and to find the felt meaning of it. And so in my private practice as a psychologist, I have people go into the anxiety in their stomach, the pains in their hearts or whatever, and help them to learn how to heal that by doing six steps, clearing a there are six steps to it that you can read in his focusing book. That's a way to go into your felt experience and to find felt meaning. So many people are doing methods like that, and that's one of my favorite of mind-body medicine. So essentially, one of the ways to deal with the problems in your everyday life, the unraveling when you have a breakup in your life, you lose a job, all the things that are happening in the real troubled times that we're living in, one of the things is you can use mind-body interventions. And when I was presenting this particular presentation at hospitals in the old days, it was a lot of these interventions weren't there. And so a lot of people would be suspicious about mind-body medicine when I was presenting this 15 or 20 years ago. But the fact is that there is a lot of research in mind-body medicine. And again, when I'm doing longer presentations, I go through a lot of these studies that are up there in the PowerPoint having to do with pain syndromes, lower back pain, cardiovascular disease. There are many aspects where mind-body medicine, guided imagery, breathing methods, activating the relaxation response, each one of these is a peer-reviewed study that shows how mind-body medicine it works. In meta-analytic studies, what now is known is between 35% and 55% of all cures. And this is called the placebo effect. So any medicine that's given to you, 35% of that will be helped if you have a positive versus a negative belief. And sometimes you can even heal things yourself. Other times, Western medicine is really important. The problem with a lot of things that are going on in spiritual circles in terms of this is an all-or-none method of thinking that says all you need to do is believe that you can heal yourself and you'll be healed. That's way over on this side because we know there is a reality to the physical world. We know that a strong percentage of healing is based on what we do. But there's also a reality to the physical world. So shame can come from the belief that all you need to do is think right and then you're going to heal your cancer. On the other hand, if you don't use mind-body medicine, you're going to limit the efficacy of what it is you're doing. So So there's much research that really backs this up in terms of the integration of mind-body medicine in relationship to the psychoneuroimmunological system. The last 15 years of research has shown that that split is problematic and that the mind is really in the body. That's why these words like neuropeptides, meaning the mind is in your stomach. So many years ago, when I was just initially being trained in focusing and learning that the mind was in the body, I didn't have the benefit of this kind of research that Candace Pert has and that many other people have that shows this research. So some of the things that are mind-body medicine are the relaxation response, meditation techniques, biofeedback, psychotherapy, hypnosis, guided imagery, the transcending versus transmuting practices. What that means is that many mind-body medicines are practices are transcendent in nature. We transcend what it is that we're going through by going into an altered state of consciousness. There's methods to go into altered states, many, many different methods. There was a book by Charlie Tart many years ago that talked about that. And I'll show you one of my favorite methods that I use with my patients in a couple of minutes. And then I'm going to also try to show you some Qigong and Tai Chi methods, which is another one of my favorite mind-body medicine practices. So first, given that we don't have a lot of time, usually I like to take about 10 minutes with this, but here I'm going to just give you a little experience. If you'd like, just move up on the edge of your chair. And anybody that doesn't want to do this, feel comfortable not to do it. And so just notice your breath rising up your back as you breathe in. And give yourself a number on a subjective units of distress scale. They call that a SUD scale. Like right now I feel X amount of tension, a 9, I feel really tense, or whatever it is. Then go and notice your breath coming up your back. And then on your out-breath, a long out-breath, longer than your in-breath, and a pause down your belly. This is called microcosmic orbit breathing. And what I add to it with my patients is imagining that there's a river that's coming down, washing over the top of your head. This is the river of your life. Sometimes you've gone through waterfalls or constriction in your river or anxiety with it being very choppy. But deep down underneath the river, there's deeper currents. See if you can picture the most beautiful river that you've ever seen in your life as you're doing this. And as your breath rises up, on your in-breath and it comes down, you focus more on the out-breath, on letting go. Now, as you come down, there might be issues that come up there. And let's say you have some anxiety in your stomach. You can put a hand on your stomach to help to self-soothe it. Or you could use Zenlin's focusing method to go through finding what is in there and what is that pain in your stomach. What's its meaning? What's it all about? And so this is a method that's kind of one of the center points of the type of therapy that I do with people. I have them go in there and work with that. This is called the river of life. The other thing that is very important in mind-body healing is standing meditation. If you want, you could just stand up for a minute in front of your chair and do the same thing that you just did, except have your knees be bent. And your pelvis slightly turned in, your hands relaxed at your side, your chin slightly in, and you notice your breath coming up your back and down the front of your body, and you imagine that you're standing like a tree. So you're doing the same thing that you just did, and start giving yourself a number on your SUD scale, subjective units of distress scale. This is a way to find a new life stance. Your hands are by your sides. Remember, if you don't feel comfortable with anything that I'm saying, do it the way that you want to. and your belly is pointed straight forward. And what you can do is make a little circle from heel to toe and toe to heel so that you're feeling as if you're nice and grounded, but you're also circulating your chi. You can imagine you're a tree that's rooted in the earth and feeling yourself rooted in your friends, family, loved ones, and spiritual traditions. And as you're breathing in, you focus on the trunk of the tree and how you're developing what's called your wei ji, your protective chi, and then all the way up in your branches. How are you branching out right now in your life? What, you're in the fall, what are you, what's falling down from your tree that you've cultivated during the summer that you have to give to other people? So just feel the kind of energy that you have now. And if you feel more tense, then just feel some compassion. You put your hand on your heart and imagine that the river of your life that's coming down in front of this tree has some ice in it. There's a word written on it. I'm not doing well enough in my life. And then you just imagine the sun shining on that and sending the healing river downstream so that the ice turns to water, the water turns to water vapor, and then as you breathe in, you clear that and come down the next stream, come all the way down the stream. So that's just a little bit of an experience of what you can have a seat. I just wanted to give you a little taste of that. Normally in a workshop, I would ask various people how they felt, but given time, I just wanted to give you those two methods that are very special methods. If you really practice them, you'll get a lot. And I go into them in quite a few of my different books in terms of really showing you the methods, like in my energy psychology book and in my body-mind healing psychotherapy book, how you go through and really do those methods. As well, they're in my Reluctant Metaphysician book. So those ways of breathing are... Most people know about mind-body medicine in terms of Vipassana meditation. They know Jon Kabat-Zinn's work and Vipassana. And this is some, this method of standing meditation is what the Buddha was initially trained in. And I go into that in my Secrets to Living Younger, Longer book and go into the anthropology of how standing meditation and traditions of postural initiation were used to heal in ancient times. So right now we're instead of using methods like this, the economics of healthcare are such that we are. Our culture is trying to shift us over into buying things and buying a lot of consumer items rather than really really activating some of these primordial methods of really empowering us to heal ourselves. And this isn't an either or. Remember, in integrative medicine, we're bringing both together. So there's a difference between the word integral and integrative. As you see in the PowerPoint slide there, integrative means bringing a lot of different parts together into a whole. But integral is something deeper than that. It is a process where two traditions come together and there's an amalgamation that comes, where there's an increasing comprehensive, coherent, and holistic conceptual framework adequate to both traditions. So a lot of my work has been integrating Qigong and psychotherapy in such a way that it becomes an integral tradition. That means without ever mentioning a word about Qigong to my patients, I can have them do this type of breathing and help them. This is really activating the microcosmic orbit in Chinese medicine. It's one of the most powerful ways to activate the inner reservoir and to go down to the reservoir that's there in your body and then to move out until you get into a sea that's really deep and relaxing. It's a bodily oriented feeling that you have when you're doing it. It's actually an experience of energy. So in mindfulness meditation, which is much better known than what it is that I'm talking to you about, it's a great method. If you want, if you're not familiar with that, you can read Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, wherever you go, there you are. Or you can read his more research-oriented book, Full Catastrophe Living. But this method that comes from Qigong is equally valuable, and I want to try eventually to give you some more about that. The standing meditation is the million-dollar secret of Qigong, and there's a lot more to it, having to circulate the qi. And in my DVD and in my other books, I go into how to do this. What I want to talk to you about is a new way of looking at our, what we talk about as our spiritual traditions. This is called an all-vector approach. And you can read about this in the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology, what he conceptualizes that to be. See, initially people were talking about the spiritual approach as being Eastern. People in the East are so much more spiritual than we are. I think I'm going to go and do meditation. I'm going to study with Swami Satchidananda or whoever. And so that became our definition of spirituality. It was an Eastern perspective. And we didn't realize that there is also a spirituality in the West. If you look into the Greek mystery tradition, and to there's a whole Western spiritual tradition that I write about in my books. There is a descending spirituality. The example I gave you earlier about spirituality being up above and going into a transcendent way that, hey, look, we shouldn't talk about political downers, comes from the Greek word pneuma, spirit who is rising above. And as James Hillman taught us, psyche means going down into the depths. So spirituality is not really full unless it goes down into what's really in our own depths, and that's where depth psychology is really good. So for a period of time, as spirituality unfolded, it was like, wow, that's now you really have a whole axis there. But then women's studies came along and said, wait a second, you haven't really talked about the relational aspect of spirituality. Just connecting heart to heart is really important. You just left that out. And then political and ecological and economic people say, wait a second, you know, there's a spiritual, what you've just said thus far isn't really taking into account our very earth and the problems that we're going through with species extinction, with various other things. What are we doing about our very food? You know, if you're talking about spirituality with all of it. So basically the idea is that an all-vector approach is needed, and many people will have ways of talking about that. I like taking the metaphysic behind astrology and using it, meaning that in terms of psychology, for example, most people will say psychology means the mind. But that's a mistranslation of psyche. Psyche means the soul. And in the Greek definition of soul, it had to do with the four elements of air, which is mind, but it's also breath and cognitions and beliefs, and how those can get us off track if we have negative beliefs, culturally or in our own individual psyches. There's water, which has to do, yes, with the feelings, very important. Fire has to do with energy. Very often in modern psychology, they have problems with really allowing energy in fully in terms of the way that I define it in this book and how to bring energy really into psychology in a more using Eastern methods of relaxation and energetic cultivation. And then earth, which has to do with somatic psychotherapy. That's a very late comer into the psychology scene. And political actions. Very often therapists will shy away from having their patients do political action, but very often that comes up in my session. Now, in my most recent book, what I'm saying is that I'm revisioning what metaphysics means. Metaphysics means what's really behind the physical world. And what's behind the physical world doesn't need to be something very esoteric like we talk about in usually academic metaphysics, talks about epistemology, various kinds of concepts like that that are very philosophic and important. But there is an experiential metaphysics, which means looking behind our everyday life. That way it gives a lot more room to look at, if you're in an argument with somebody, what's really behind that? So in a certain sense, all of Western psychology is metaphysical in that sense that it's dealing with the world behind the world. of our emotions. And in an argument, what's behind that? Maybe it's somebody's relationship with their mother or father that gave them a certain belief, or they feel inadequate. And all their lives, they've gone down the path of feeling inadequate. And then all of a sudden, they realize that that was from a message that they internalized. So in this sense, I'm saying that psychology is a metaphysical pursuit. But also behind the physical world, when we're looking at various different political events, what's really going on behind the scenes? What kind of stories are being told to us for what reasons? By pharmaceutical companies or by various different economic interests that are trying to bias our perceptions? In my opinion, that's metaphysical also. Because looking at the beliefs that are creating our reality, and we can all think of many different examples, those things are very important to look at. As well, there's energy that's behind the physical world. And that's one of the things that can heal us. So there are thoughts, beliefs, energy. There's many things that are behind our everyday physical issues of our material world that are the key to healing it. So what I do in my book is I create an astrological mandala to look at that through. And that mandala basically includes fire, earth, air, and water, and many different elements to it. Not just, it's taking off and developing on the concept of an all-vector approach. So there's an energy medicine doctor called Bruce Lipton, and he basically said that we now need a new paradigm for healthcare. That when the ruling paradigm of science changes at the bottom, all the upper levels must change also. And what he's saying is that we have been lacking in that way, that we're still stuck in a biochemical method of healthcare. And so when physics changes by Einstein, that we need to move up, and then there's biology and chemistry and medicine, that we also need to bring that into psychology. And so that's been what my work has been about, is trying to bring the use of energy into psychology. And along those lines, there are many people now that are involved in the forefront of medicine that are trying to say that there's a distinction between Newtonian medicine and Einsteinian medicine. Newtonian thinkers see the human body as an intricate series of chemical systems powered by a structure of nerve, muscle, flesh, and bones. And the physical body is viewed as a supreme mechanism. But Einsteinian medicine sees human beings as a network of complex energy fields that interface with physical cellular systems. What this means is that very often something will happen first on the level of mind, then on the level of energy. We have a thought, I'm really no good, I'm a failure. Then that creates an energy of depression. Then that manifests in a sunken heart or a higher cholesterol level because we're anxious. And so a wider integrative medicine is looking at all those levels and creating a energy medicine that brings all of that in, so we have a truly integrative medicine. So I'm not going to go through all of my slides on energy medicine like when I do when I'm doing energy talks. So just briefly, the type of psychotherapy that I've developed is one that includes all of these methods here in relationship to healing. So what I'm trying to do is to create a psychotherapy that includes all of these different dimensions. And in my book, I give case illustrations about how I apply this to anxiety disorders, hypertension, and many other things. So an example of this would be taking a belief that you have when you're approaching a member of the opposite sex or somebody that you're interested in meeting, And you might be saying to yourself, he or she probably won't be interested in me, so I may as well not reach out for contact. And that might shoot your subjective units of distress level up. And you feel really anxious and inhibited, and you feel collapsed. Your body collapses in some way. But if you said a more truthful or constructive belief, I don't know whether this person is interested in me or not, and I'll have the courage to reach out, then in a certain sense you're creating a new life stance. And so very often many of our diseases, this is just an example, let's say you're feeling really constricted and contorted by not really reaching out to somebody, that might inhibit you, and it might be increasing an anxiety in your stomach, ulcerative colitis, many other things like that. And when instead you have a new way of being, it might create a new gesture that you might then have a feeling like you're reaching out more than somebody did in than you would have before in your other subpersonality. So these new postures I call anchoring a new life stance. What I've noticed in psychotherapy is that the moment of felt shift in psychotherapy, when somebody's finding this, and they start saying, wait a second, I can reach out to this person. And all of a sudden their hand comes out. And I say, hey, you notice how your hand just came out? So in ancient traditions of healing in the West and in ancient anthropology, what's happening is that you're able to find this new life stance. That's part of how you're healing yourself. Not just by having the mind, but having the state in your body where you're actually able to reach out. So when you're... This would be what's there on the level of individual psychotherapy, but we're also all involved in the mass hypnosis of cultural beliefs. And this also is inhibiting us from reaching out. So it's not in just in terms of individual psychology that this is happening, but there is a hypnotic effect of stories that disempower us, that tell us that we need to go to doctors, or that we need at times when we could be healing ourselves, not to say we shouldn't be going to doctors at other times, that we should be trusting the FDA to protect us rather than really doing our own research and really looking at, for example, the studies having to do with one of the basic beliefs that are out there is that hypertension is due to a high cholesterol level. So start doing some research on that. I could talk for about 5 or 10 minutes and tell you why I believe that that's incorrect and that heart disease is due to that. So I could talk for quite some time on that. But I'm not going to go in that direction because we have a very limited amount of time. But do some of your own research on that. Go to Mercola.com. and see what you think about what he's saying, and then take his research and then go to the places he suggests and the various different studies on that. That's just one kind of example. So I want to kind of give you just a quick illustration of one patient that came to me to show you what I mean by everything that I'm talking about. One time there was a patient that came to me and he had really high hypertension. And Dr. Saputo referred him to me. And in that referral, what I saw is that he wanted this Qigong thing that I did, because he heard me talk about it. And I said, he told me about how he was having issues with his wife. And his wife was very, was really uptight. This is a very wealthy executive, and he would come to he would come home, and he'd keep on buying new motorcycles. He could afford to just buy a new motorcycle almost every week. And he'd say, hey, honey, I just got a new motorcycle. I remember last week you said you didn't like that red one, so I got a green one this week. And so, he said, hey, I like to river, you know. But she was really upset by it, and he only slept 4 hours a night. And he was extremely neglectful of being with his children, and his marriage was ready to break up. And he wanted me to give him a method of relaxation, a transcendent method. And so I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but in your case, I really think it would be good if we did a little bit of work together, maybe in couples therapy or individual therapy. And he basically said, no, that's not what I'm interested in. So I said, well, you know, in your case, I think it's really important. And he said, look, I don't think you understand who I am. I could buy this clinic like that. And then you would have to give me the treatment that I'm asking for. And I said, well, even if you were own the clinic, I would still have my medical ethics about me, and I would still say that I'd be glad to give that to you, but first let's do a little bit of this. So he reluctantly said, okay. So while I was doing that with him, I did this river life method that I did with all of you. I helped him to go down in his body, and when he went down, I could see that something was happening with him. I said, what just happened there? Because he was doing focusing on the felt meaning of what was going on. He said, with his eyes closed, I feel that there's a little bit of a sense of a disconnected wire, and that I'm not really connected to the ground. There's a little bit of irritation or anger in it. I said, just stay with that image and see what pops up. When did you notice that feeling happening earlier in your life? And what popped up for him was sitting around a dinner table in his childhood, and he had four brothers around him, and he had just gotten a D on his report card. And everybody started laughing and said, yeah, you're such a dummy. I can't believe that you got a D. You know, you're never going to amount to anything, his father said to him. You know, you're such a dummy. And then his brothers chimed in, don't worry if you don't make it in life, which you probably won't since you're such a dummy. You can always ride on Uncle Jimmy's garbage truck and come to our mansions and pick up our garbage, and you'll always have a job, so you don't need to worry. So that kind of shaming thing came up for him, and I said, I bet you made a promise to yourself at that moment. He said, yeah, how did you know? I said, what was the promise? He said, I promised myself that I would never rest until I made more money than everyone in my family twice over. I said, have you accomplished that? He said, yeah, more so. So what he realized is that his insomnia, I said, do you realize how literally you took that belief, I'm never going to rest? Because he was sleeping 4 hours a night. And so his wife marked this, that this was the major change in his life and in their marriage, because he realized that he was trying to meet this demand that he felt that he needed to do, of really living up to this promise he made himself. And once he realized that, it decaffected is the word for it. It took that energy away. His hypertension started to go down, in addition to using the other methods that then I gave him, because then he got the felt meaning of what was going on. So the point that I'm making is, if you really look at the amount of statins and other kinds of drugs that are being given to people that have hypertension, the amount of Ambien that's being given to people with insomnia, and the way that Western psychology is not given parity with Western medicine. They're looked at, and politically and economically, they're not our own souls and the meanings of our illnesses. This is what integral health care is. It's really what's in there. And then chiropractors, acupuncturists, Western medical doctors, everybody as a team can get together. This is what real integral health care should be, where psychologists are also in there really working with the meaning of what's going on. So I'm struggling a little bit with my PowerPoint because Microsoft just revised it so you can't see any of the slides that you want to go to that are forward. So just very briefly, I wanted to show you some of the things on Qigong. This is a quick study about Qigong and hypertension, showing a 30-year study in China where Qigong was able to reduce hypertension and blood pressure. And this is another study showing it in relationship to reducing mortality and stroke. There's many different studies this way that show the power of Qigong that way. And so that's one of the things that I work with, and I have classes, any of you that are over in the East Bay, I do classes on it. I work with doing pain relief by doing some of the methods that I've shown you, but I talk about them more in my book, and you can see some of those specifics there. This is the idea of a psychotherapy mandala. So there are various different exercises you can use that are on my DVD. So what I'm having to do is, since I can't read any of the slides that I want to go to, I'm having to kind of jump around and looking where I want to go. Yes? Question.
Could I ask your viewpoint on distance healing and medical intuitive?
Could you hold that question? I'm not going to so much go into that because I have a lot of other things that I want to cover. It's a very, very good question. If I have time, I'd be glad to cover that. So basically, what I'm trying to say to you is that anytime you have a career change, an upsetting external event, a serious illness, a painful breakup, or an unraveling culture, any of those things are invitations to enter into a deeper world behind the world. You might not have chosen to go there, but you evolve thereby. So any illness that you have, most of the times that people have illnesses that I see, because I specialize in people that have various kinds of illnesses and giving them self-healing methods for health problems, when you have something like that, there's a spiritual dimension to it. Most people suffer worse from what they're saying to themselves about how bad of a person they are for having it, as much as they are from the actual disease. So if you can look at that as an opportunity that you're being initiated into the path of a wounded healer, then that is important. So while I'm answering questions from the audience, you can look over some of the upcoming presentations that I'm doing. I most like answering questions from the audience, so I want to give you a chance to ask questions that are related to what I was talking about. And any questions you have that way, I'll be glad to answer. So what kinds of questions do you have?
Right, we're listening to Michael Mayer, PhD, and now we're open for questions. I'll pass this microphone around.
I understand what you're talking about when you're mostly willing yourself hypertension, like your mind, and you're really focusing on yourself. But how does that relate to when you have a really serious disease, like if you have cancer or diabetes or stuff like that? You still need medicine or, you know, actual medicine. I mean,
yes.
You can't will away those things. I don't understand.
Great question.
The whole question there.
Thank you so much. What a great question. First of all, I'm not talking about willing something away. What I'm talking about is using mind-body medicines that can, together with, remember I'm talking about a mandala of healthcare. I'm talking about integral healthcare. I'm not saying that psychology or just your mind is the key to it. Remember I said that that's 35 to 55% of healing something. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't go to Western medicine and get some treatment for cancer or any of the other things that you're talking about. But also what I'm saying is your mind will help you to speed healing. If you are getting cancer treatment, you can work, and it's not just thinking positive, it's really entering into an energetic state where you're going to enhance your healing. So it's not willing it necessarily. Will can be an important part of it, and there's research that shows that, for example, having some anger and fighting spirit will help with certain kinds of cancer diagnosis. So we can't separate the mind from the physical body. there are psychological factors in cancer that can help to a degree. The mistake is when people have all or none and say, this is all physical. Or, no, all you need to do is will it away. Both of those are mistakes. Thank you for your question. Excellent one.
Hi, thank you. I'm a very happy patient of Dr. Saputo.
Oh, great.
It's wonderful for you that you're working with him.
Yes, I feel privileged.
Just a couple of things. Does this have a lot of different Qigong, you're doing exercises? Because I like Qigong. And can you mention...
Let me answer that question first and then ask your second one. So this basically has the system of Qigong that I've developed. It has 10 different systems that are integrated. And one of them is free on my website. It's called Tai Chi Ruler. That is going like this, up and down like that. And it's breathing in and out. And in the study by Dr. Michael Irwin that I didn't get a chance to tell you about, he used Tai Chi Chi, which is Tai Chi Ruler, in healing insomnia. On my website, bodymindhealing.com, you can see that for free, and that's one of the 10 systems that are in here. So it has standing meditation, it has exercises for your joints, it has many different exercises in it. Thank you for your first question. What was your second one?
I heard John Robbins and Jeffrey Smith speak recently about the bad effects of GMOs, maybe if you could just mention a few of those. And I also heard that Prop 37, if we vote yes, we want at least these things to be labeled.
Exactly. So basically there was a French study recently that talked about GMOs and tumors. That just came out very recently. Before that, there were many studies that showed the relationship of GMOs and leaky gut. And that when you're giving GMOs to rats, a lot of the issues of obesity and leaky gut syndrome, which many people have, are really involved with that. I have a link on my website, on my Reluctant Metaphysician site. In links, there's a whole thing on the GMO study, so you can read about it yourself if you want direct access to that.
And they said the rise in diabetes is also linked to...
There's much research that way. So what I'm really saying in this talk, and Proposition 37 is a no-brainer because we need to know what's there, because you may be eating things and having symptoms and you don't even know whether there are GMOs in it or not, because the pharmaceutical lobby has basically made it to stop transparency. So nobody can even, in my opinion, can even have a thought that's against that. But as to what the realities are of GMOs, then I encourage you to really do your research on everything and really see what you come to yourself. Another question in the back?
So how optimistic or not are you that we can loosen the stranglehold of Big Pharma on our legislators and our medical practitioners? And what can be done, what's being done to start making that a reality?
Great question. I had one more slide that I wanted to show you that I'm not able to quite locate, but it talked about political actions in relationship to all of this. And basically there are various different people that are doing, you know, like you have Pachamama is an example of somebody that's taking in our ecological devastation, and they're basically having the land have rights. You have the Yes Men. I talk about a lot of positive solutions. I'm not just complaining in the book. In the book, I give examples. And the whole book is really, this book is about how to find your own life stance, going into your own political action. So the question isn't what my belief is about what I can do or what we can do. The real question that I pose in this book is how each of us can find our own stance in relationship to our culture, and how we can stand up against the pharmaceutical company's influence, how we can deal with regulatory capture. And the Yes Men, various other people, do political actions. They create humor. They create false stories of like saying, BP or, you know, whoever, who was in charge of Bhopal in India, that they've just decided to give that money back to the people in India. So there are ways that each of us can use humor, storytelling or whatever, in order to take our stance. I've done it through this book, so my answer to this is I'm presenting it this way. That's my voice. My stance is as an author and a writer. Some people are political activists. Other people go on the internet and sign petitions. Other people stand out in front of pharmaceutical companies along with the Occupy movement. Some people contact their senators. Some people use creative artwork, do pictures as artists. So what I'm doing is I'm talking about how each of us can empower ourselves to really say, I'm here for a purpose, and if one of your key issues is pharmaceutical companies, then you go after that. There's so many different areas politically that each of us can go after that's very important. And what I'm saying is that by not including ancient sacred wisdom traditions in our practice of healing, that we commit a crime analogous to our culture's trampling over the Native Americans. We get to occupy the land, but we lose the sacred knowledge of how to be with its treasures. So what I'm trying to advocate is that rather than using pharmacological methods, my voice is to say, look, let's try indigenous healing practices. Let's try many other practices and see what we can do in order to heal our culture. So that's my voice, is that there are alternatives to pharmaceuticals. And if people start empowering themselves with seeing that they can use these methods with hypertension, anxiety, and whatever, and becoming informed consumers, then you're not going to be as reliant on them. So one last question.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm very excited to be here. My path has been similar to what you've talked about over many years of refusing to take drugs and to really go to be educated. And it seems like this really brings the question, you know, in having kids in schools is there a movement or how can a movement start at the grassroots level is not only going after the pharmaceutical companies, but looking at the family systems within schools, within certain cultures, looking at convalescent homes in terms of education to allow people, because I know my own family, they refuse certain things just because of the idea of ignorance.
That's right.
And until they experience, let's say, Reiki, they experience it, then they believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we go about doing that? Or are there any movements
yes.
happening right now that are demonstrating how we can do that?
Great question. Thank you very much for the question. One of the things I like about the idea of the Commonwealth Club is that we have a commonwealth. And what is our commonwealth? The commons is what we all own in common, our own healing resources, our own ability to work with ourselves and whatever. There's a Qigong study showing in Vietnam in convalescent homes showing that Qigong promotes cognitive performance and helps people to learn their own healing methods. I'd love more Tai Chi practitioners to get hold of that and to go into convalescent homes. There are movements that are trying to do that. Every one of you has the power to take something you believe in. Reiki, there's people that are bringing music into convalescent homes. I just went into a hospice and played my flute for my dying aunt, and everybody was wanting more of that. But the last thing I want to say before closing is just that the path of a reluctant metaphysician speaks to the importance of a holistic spiritual philosophy in our current times of the great unraveling of our political, economic, and cultural, as well as our ecological world. In the book, you'll find an approach to finding your life stance in such troubled times. The metaphysical path is an all-vector approach that incorporates both spiritual and soulful pathways, traditions of postural initiation such as Tai Chi, mythology, depth psychology, and body-mind healing methods, and a multidimensional approach to the political sphere. So I thank all of you for coming. I hope you'll check out some of my books. They're over there. And I'll be here to sign books for those of you want. And Bill, I think, has something else to say. But I just want to say thank you so much for being here, and thanks so much for the Commonwealth Club for existing and providing room for people to be talking about what's our common heritage.
Our thanks to Michael Mayer, PhD, for his interesting comments here this evening. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, celebrating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you.